Karima Brown on 702.
19 minutes after 8 o'clock. Now, it appears as if there is a very determined and deliberate effort to collapse the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into a set of inquiries around how the commission is conducting itself, the people who work there, how information is leaked. Yesterday, we saw how former Bosasa COO Angelo Agrizi affidavit was leaked to the media. And of course, this follows the fact that for Minister of Public Enterprises, Praveen Gordhan's affidavit was also leaked to the media. We saw details in the Sunday Times and the City Press of how the facilities company gifted Minister Nomvula Mokonyana with groceries, expensive alcohol and meat every year, and even paid her for her relatives' funerals. And she also got a monthly retainer. This before the actual testimony today, when these issues were actually revealed as part of the process. So the question to ask is, who benefits, whose interests are most at risk? And of course, we have several examples also of other breaches at the commission. Well, joining me to look at what the motives behind some of these strange behavior at the commission is Professor Mark Swilling. He is the co-author of The Shadow State, The Politics of State Capture. He also co-wrote the Betrayal of the Promise report. Professor Mark Swilling, you are joining me from Davos. I am very grateful. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Good evening, Karima.
Now, the point that we want to make, or that I want to make, and it fascinates me, is that we've had several breaches now. We've had two really important affidavits leaked. So there's obviously a security leak around information. We've had a situation where the secretary of the commission, who is an employee of the Department of Justice, who provides infrastructure support for the commission, is implicated in a bribery scandal involving Bosasa. We've had Mr. Agrizi on the stand and seeing a former police officer who now works for Bosasa, who used his old police card to get access to the place. The commission had to suspend its proceedings to deal with the security questions. And then, of course, we also had the fact that a camera crew's entire equipment was actually stolen at the commission. And people are beginning to ask questions around, why are these things happening? And then we mustn't forget, of course, that a battle also had to be fought with the very judge who is, in fact, presiding over this matters, when he wanted to appoint an advocate to be the person to look at whether the evidence before the commission is credible. But the person whom he wanted to have do that was actually someone who went around to decry the findings of the former public protector's report and say there is no state capture. And that person eventually stepped down, and Judge Zondo said that he wasn't aware that this person was involved in these issues. When commissions of inquiry like this are set up, it's often a battle. The forces of state capture are morphing all the time. Professor Swilling, is this unusual to try and embroil a process like this in confusion, in a set of lies or a set of situations where people are just unable to take the word of the commission?
It would be surprising if it didn't happen.
Mm.
So I think we need to accept that the Zondo Commission is sitting at the eye of the storm.
Mm.
And it is going to be subject of numerous attempts to subvert its legitimacy, to question its authority. And the reason for that is that the battle for state capture, the battle against state capture, is far, far from over. People, I think many South Africans are naive in thinking that just because Cyril Ramaphosa is president,
yes,
and we've had job summits and investment summits and businesses on board, and We have a new director of prosecutions and so on and so forth that, you know,
yes,
we're winning the battle.
Mm.
But, you know, there's a counterattack by state capture forces waged primarily through the provincial elections for the provincial executive committees of the ANC and other fora. And, there's a lot of people who would like to see the Zondo Commission discredited and shut down.
Yes. I mean, that's the key question.
That's part of it.
Absolutely. I mean, the key question for me is who benefits if this commission collapses in terms of credibility or just infrastructure support? I mean, for example, the Justice Department gives all the infrastructure. Surely when they vetted the individuals coming to the commission, they should have picked up that the person they're proposing to be the secretary of the commission is in fact linked to a Bosasa bribing scandal. I mean, surely someone like the Justice Minister, Mr. Masuta, has a case to answer here.
Well, I mean, these processes, these payments were deeply buried.
Yes.
I mean, I was, you know, I coordinated the team that produced the Betrayal of the Promise report.
Yeah.
Bosasa never figured, never emerged in a huge pile of information that hundreds of researchers and journalists have gone through, and now we're discovering the name of a company and a group of people who were absolutely key. Who else? Who else don't we know about?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there must be a lot of people wondering, what is Agrizi going to say next? And how many more of these kinds of people are going to emerge out of the woodwork? So there are a lot of people who are really worried.
Yes. And so there's lots of people who actually have a vested interest in this commission failing.
Absolutely. And we also need to ask, why is Agrizi doing this? What's his deal? And what is he holding back in order to secure immunity for himself?
Absolutely.
So if he's saying, listen, this is what I know, but it's the real juicy stuff I'm holding back until I get a deal.
Yeah, and everybody's already saying that he's arguing for immunity because he's coming forward. Professor Swilling, let's just listen to Mr. Agrizi explain what he gave to Minister Mokonyane. And the reason why we're singling this out is this is the first cabinet minister that he has now implicated.
But it was 120 cases of cold drinks, 4 cases of high-quality whiskey, 40 cases of beer, 8 lambs, cut up, obviously, 12 cases of frozen chicken, 200 kilograms of beef in various bri packs, and then numerous cases of premium brandy and some speciality alcohol. I would get a list. Organizing and paying for funerals in respect of deceased family members. I would have to arrange for a rental vehicle for up to 3 months at a time for a daughter. Chair, the daughter would phone me up and request an Audi A3 Cabriolet.
Now, I mean, if one looks at that, an ordinary South African just says to him or herself, what next? I mean, what are we going to hear next? Frozen chicken legs. I mean, that ministers can order. What does this tell us of the nature of the way in which Bosasa was doing it? Because we also have your Twitterati and your commentators trying to have an Olympics of who was most corrupt. Was it Bosasa or the Guptas? And it's almost as if we can trade the one off for the other. The thing that people don't realize is that both is bad. The only difference between Bosasa and the Guptas is that the Guptas managed to actually take power from the president of the country and try to make cabinet appointments, you know, whilst Bosasa did what big companies all around the world does, which is bribe their way into getting contracts.
Yes. Well, I think, what really has struck me about Agrizi's testimony is the kind of ordinary everydayness, the kind of banality of the routines.
Yeah.
The call by Mokonyane's daughter specifying a particular kind of car. You know, it's extraordinary that an atmosphere and an environment was constructed where people didn't have to hide.
Mm.
They just knew that they could do these things, and it was fine. It was in the open. It was acceptable. And what level of disintegration, not just of personal morality, but of systemic and institutional accountability occurred in order for that to come about? That's what we need to address. The fight against state capture is about rebuilding the norms, the standards, the respect, and the systems that ensure that this kind of thing can't happen again. It will always happen on some in some way somehow, but not on a massive scale. When it starts happening on a massive scale, then looting of the nation's resources become a major threat to the development process.
Absolutely. Let's just quickly listen to Agrizi talk about how they managed the parliamentary committee and the negative impact of media reports about Posasa's involvement and how it shouldn't interfere in their future arrangements.
What was agreed at the meeting was that despite the fact that there was a lot of negative press publicity, despite the fact that there would be issues raised in the press that were, in essence, against Posasa, that the parliamentary committee, who would normally have raised it as well in the parliamentary committee, they would keep quiet on it and they would make sure that they could manage it so that it wouldn't stop Posasa from getting new business or preclude any potential extensions and growth.
Was that all that was decided at that meeting?
Well, at the meeting, basically, they agreed that there was an agreement previously made amongst them with Gavin, and this is what was agreed at the meeting.
Right. Would they receive, and by they I mean the parliamentarians present, anything in return?
Yes.
Where was that agreed?
That agreement apparently had taken place at the previous agreement with Gavin Watson.
Wow.
I was told by Gavin Watson at the meeting in front of them, Chair, to make sure that these amounts are packed.
What are the amounts?
The amounts was for Vincent Smith, 45,000 rand, Magagula, 30,000 rand, Wininguenya, 20,000 rand.
Like you say, the level of detail is extraordinary, Professor Swilling. And of course, many people were very disappointed when they heard Vincent Smith. I was particularly struck by the fact that today during Mr. Agrizi's testimony, he said Vincent was a hard nut to crack because he rebuffed them a lot. And they found a chink in his armor eventually and got him. And we know, of course, that they ended up paying for his daughter's university fees as well. This is a company that knows how to manage the patronage network. I mean, they managing the committee so that even if they're in trouble with one contract, it doesn't impact the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. And what's really extraordinary, but also consistent with many stories that I've been told, is the openness. In other words, in the committee meeting, the payments are discussed. And, you know, you have to think to yourself, what's going through the minds of those people in that meeting then, and what are they thinking now? You know, when Magagula hears this evidence being presented in public now, what is he going to do now? And how is the ANC going to prepare a response to what's emerging? And what is going to happen when it comes to charging people?
Yeah.
What's the coordination between the Zondo Commission and the Director of Public Prosecutions? What kind of cases are being prepared? What kind of time frame? Are a couple of big fish going to get fried before the election or not? And the reason why I say that is that the nation is being has become schizophrenic. There's a Twitter sphere of fake news where the large majority of ANC members are existing and receiving their information and coming to conclusions about conspiracies.
Absolutely, and that's a fantastic
commissions.
Yes. that was actually formally dealing with it. That's a wonderful way to segue into my next guest. I'm going to let you go back into your meeting in Davos. Professor Swilling, thank you very much for your participation. We're going to take a spot break. After we come back, we're going to explore the point that Professor Swilling put on the table, which is, of course, how people receive information vis-a-vis the facts that are coming out at the Commission, the question of fake news. And, of course, this weekend we had an example of that. We will be joined by the Sunday Times' political editor, Sibonga Konke Shoba, as well as a journalist under whose name the fake story was written. And then, of course, Ferial Hafiji and William Byrd will talk to us about what all of it means when people are not able to tell the difference between a truth and a lie.